It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to That Psyched Runner podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina. On this show, we talk about how to thrive in the sport of running, from on the road to in the kitchen to in your own mind. We hear inspirational stories from others and talk about the psychology behind it all. I'm so happy you're here and enjoy the show. First of all, shout out to Holly because we are using her microphone and computer in a lobby in Boston. So hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode. I'm super excited. This is a live episode with Holly Samuel from Hollyfield Nutrition. This is her second time on my show. So thank you so much, Holly, for being on. And again, for letting me use your computer microphone because I had to go through TSA and my computer broke this morning. So Holly, do you want to do a quick introduction again?
Yes, sure. And what we're going to talk about today is controlling your controllables. So yes. All of that you could not control.
Absolutely.
Stuff happens when you run a big marathon. But yeah, I'm Holly Samuel. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm a board certified sports dietitian. My master's is in health education and eating disorders. And I have a private nutrition coaching practice. And I live about an hour outside of Boston. So I was really excited to get the opportunity to come and record with you today because I have serious FOMO about not running on Monday because I had a baby in January, but I'm just super excited to be here. The Boston Marathon weekend is so much fun.
Oh my gosh, I am so excited for that. And just like, I listened to both of your recap episodes again. I was like, just because I love your episode. So I'm sure you guys listen to our podcast, but if you don't, please go listen to it. It's the best. But I was like listening, I was like, oh my gosh, it just sounds amazing. And it is living up to the hype. It feels like Disney World. I was telling Holly, it's like wild. So yeah, I'm super excited to have her back on the show. And what she said today, we are going to be talking about controlling the controllables. And we're going to kind of talk about something from two different avenues. So right, we want to talk about like remaining positive during a race and like how to stay positive during a race and how both feeling and also positive mindset and kind of psychological flexibility can play into that. Then we're going to answer a lot of your questions that you gave in Instagram DMs. So I guess let's just kind of do like a recap of like, how can carbs give us a good race? Like, let's say I'm going into Boston and I'm like, okay, why do I need to carb load? Like, why do I need carbs? But like, especially for Boston, especially.
Yeah. So I always kind of say Boston's like a masterclass in marathoning. Like it's just, you can't really hide on the course at Boston. Like, you know, marathons are hard to begin with. That's why not that many people do them. But the Boston Marathon is just really challenging. It starts late. It's in a questionable time of year weather-wise. You kind of never know what you're going to get. And then it's kind of a rolling downhill course with a bunch of hills at the point that is always hardest in the marathon, which is around mile 16 through 21. Yeah, it's just like, love that so much. So, you know, it kind of tends to be a situation where if you have not properly carb loaded, if you have not taken enough carbs in your fueling plan, right around the time people tend to run out of stored carbohydrate in the form of glycogen is around like the 2 to 2.5 hour mark. And for many people, that's around mile 16 through 21 in the marathon, which is where there's a bunch of hills to really just empty your tank. So, you know, there's a lot of people. And if this has happened to you, you're like, yep, that have, you know, not had a great experience the last 10K of the Boston Marathon because it's, you know, it kind of sucked you dry. You know, especially if you didn't fuel properly. And no one wants that. Like you want to have a really good experience. you know, going onto Hereford and Boylston Street. So that's why carbs are important, particularly for this course.
Yes, that is so important. And I remember you saying in your recap last year that, like, I like have her episodes in memory. I'm just kidding. I'm like, so at this time point, I'm just kidding now. But I remember you said, like, Boston requires more carbs than a normal marathon. And you said that, like, what was it? Last year, was it the year that you took is met like the most gels you ever have during a marathon?
I had a gel PR and a time PR.
Which is more impressive? I do not know. I'm just kidding. That's awesome. Yeah. I know. I remember. I think you took like nine.
I took
it?
Nine. Have you nine seen gels. Bridesmaids? Like have like Melissa McCarthy yes. where she's like, I took nine puppies. I'm like, I took nine gels.
You need to make like a reel out of that.
Yeah. I took nine.
Oh my gosh. Guys, should I try and beat that? I'm not saying, who knows?
Yeah, 319, nine gels.
319, nine gels. See, you guys, those posting your flat runner pictures with three gels, that's not enough, my friends. But yes, that is really good advice, especially for the hills and especially for preparing for that, because now I'm like, I mean, I've been trying to like plan my nutrition of like kind of front loading that first half when things are easier and then, you know, going up. Those hills are going to be awful, and they're not going to be awful though. They don't necessarily have to be.
They're really not, like, they're not bad. It's just where they are on the course. And like, if you have fueled properly, they're still not that bad, but like, if you haven't, they're really bad. So that's why we're here today.
yeah. Because like when we don't, like, maybe we like talk a little bit about this, like if we don't fuel properly, like do our legs feel heavier? Like, does the marathon feel harder? Like, if we don't, let's say we don't hit a wall, but we're still kind of under fueled, what does that feel like?
Yeah. So typically what that feels like in particular on the Boston course, you know, again, I run this race twice. I've had very good experiences both times, but what I've heard from other people that it's felt like is, you know, every time you basically go up a hill, like it's just going to feel like your legs are getting a bit more dead because one, it is a net downhill race. So you're kind of pounding your quads going into Newton. And then you get a change of terrain, which is nice, but it kind of taps out your glycogen stores. And we can't, like, if we have some glycogen in our arms, we can't just, like, give it to our quads. Like, if there's none left in the quads. Why? Yeah, it's like, you know, it doesn't share. So, you know, if you're kind of out of your stores in your quads and they're trashed from going downhill, it's not going to feel super great going up and down the hills. But if you have fueled properly, what my experience has been in Boston on the hills, and of course, like trained properly, you know, that's important too. But
really?
Yeah,
I'm just
you do have to train on hills. Ooh, I do recommend it. You know, is that the uphills are uphills, but then the downhills are always longer than the uphills. So like what goes up comes down, and it comes down more than it goes up. So, you know, it kind of can feel pretty fast if you've done it correctly. Yeah.
That's such good advice and really good to know. And I'll have to remember that. Like, okay, what goes up comes down, because people are like, I feel like it's almost like a hazing, like, oh, you gotta get to the hills. Like everybody's like, it's gonna be the worst. But I feel like, okay, are the hills really the worst, or are you just under fuel? Like that could be a me.
It's super true. Yeah. Like if you get to the hills in a good spot, like you're gonna feel like, okay, I'm okay. I like at the end of the downhill for every uphill, and then there will be another hill. And then by heartbreak, you'll be like, okay, I would like for the hills to be over now. And then they are. And then it's like downhill into the city, and it's super crowded and super electric. So it kind of carries you home.
That's such, you have such good advice on this course. I'm so excited and just like, I'm like ready to take on this challenge of like conquering the hills. Like I know that it's not going to be easy and that's going to be okay. And so kind of talking about that too, from like a psychological perspective, right? Like staying positive in a race. Like there's so many different tools that you use in life that you can also use in a marathon to get through these tough courses. And like, I have no experience on the Boston course. This is my third marathon. I am a new runner, but the things that I've learned through my marathons and also just from sports psychology literature is that like we are in control of how we respond to the race. And like physically, like maybe we're not in a good place that day, and that's okay. And like, if things are feeling a little bit harder, rather than kind of channeling that energy and being in that, staying in that negative space, you can use psychological flexibility and you can kind of use some cognitive restructuring techniques. So the same things that we do in therapy for somebody coming in saying like, oh, I'm experiencing some depression, like let's rework some of those like negative or false beliefs. So somebody like, let's say they come in and they're like, I'm unlovable. We rework that and we do some cognitive restructuring and we say, okay, what really makes me unlovable and how can we reframe this? So if you're in this race or you're in any marathon for that sake, and you're just starting to get to a negative place and saying, I can't do this, I can't do this, you can reframe that and say, okay, what makes you think that you can't do this? Is it because you hurt? It's like, no, you've gone through painful things before and you kept pushing. So then you can start thinking about times in your life, maybe that are worse than a marathon that you've endured. And that's actually why there's a big correlation between people who have experienced like trauma and they go into endurance sports, is because like you understand what it's like to put up with persistent suffering. And so just kind of thinking in that negative place, say, okay, the reason why I believe I can't do this is because I feel awful right now. But it's like, you're feeling awful, but that's just a feeling. It will pass. And like you, any thoughts that you have, just let them float away. They're just thoughts. You don't have to act on a thought. And also, if you do have to walk, if you do have to stop, not beating yourself up for that and not saying I'm a failure, it's staying positive through that and getting through the hills. Let's say you get to the hills and you're feeling nervous, rather than, so our bodies, they can't really tell the difference between anxious energy in our nervous system and excited energy in our nervous system. So anxious energy in our nervous system, you're going to start attributing that arousal to being nervous. Say like, I'm so nervous for my marathon, I'm so scared. But instead, your body, it might be in an elevated state. If you just reframe that and say something like, I'm so excited for this, like, I cannot wait for this, you're going to respond in a completely different way. And like having a positive mindset has been shown to increase performance and reduce effort. And it's just so, or like reduce like perceived effort exertion. It's still going to be a hard effort, but just like overall, like staying positive throughout the race is super important in reframing any of those negative thoughts you have, because guess what? You can do hard things. Like, I know that's like so cliche, but it's like, you actually like can, I promise you.
Yeah. There were so many good nuggets in there. Like, I really like to think of this race as like, I just have to get through like Wellesley. Like if you just get to Wellesley, which is around like mile 11 or 12, uh-huh. Well, you can hear it from a mile away, but, and you can hear it from a mile away because it is really loud, but because it's so quiet a mile away. So you're like, what is that? It's the Wellesley Scream Tunnel. Cause once you get there, it kind of just pulls you through. Cause then all you have to do is get to the hills and then the race starts. And so cool. The cool thing, as you know, about marathons is like, you could feel awful and then you could feel good again later in the race, especially if you feel properly or if the terrain changes or if you have more positive mindset reframes. So even if the hills are feeling like they're sucking and you're like, oh no, I'm having a bad day, you know, try not to be all or nothing about it. Like keep moving forward and, you know that this is temporary. And that there's four hills and then it's downhill. So I think a lot of people, you know, will kind of see their pace slip, you know, on the hills and kind of panic and be like, oh, it's over, I'm just gonna like jog it in. But don't think that way. You know, it's a hill, like it's, you're gonna slow down. That's okay. You know, my kind of mantra the years I've run it was like, don't be a hero on the hills, like just keep moving forward. And then, you know, then you don't have to run the hills anymore once they're over. And you'll probably feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I love that. Don't be a hero on the hills, for sure. And the people who are trying to be, you will probably pass them in the end. That's yes. Like, that is good advice. I still remember this, from my very first marathon. It was Coach Amanda Brooks. She had this whole like little running thing up at Bayshore. Or no, it was my first half marathon. And she did this little like talk and she was saying, yeah, my favorite game to play is watch how many people pass me in the beginning and how many people I pass at the end that pass me. And so that's like really good to reframe too. It's like, yeah, you're gonna slow down. Everybody slows down on the hills. And like even the elite athletes, like they have the thoughts of like, I'm never doing this again, I want to stop, these hills suck. So it's like, what you are experiencing is normal. And the beauty of the marathon is there are 30,000 other runners feeling that way. So you guys can empathize with each other and push each other and encourage each other when things get hard. And again, control what you can control. If the hills are, if you're slowing down significantly, or you do, let's say worst comes to worst, you hit a wall, you can still walk it in. You can still control what you can control. You can focus on the positive, enjoy the Boston experience. And as I always say, crawling is an acceptable way to get across the finish line.
Yeah. And like Kipchoge had a bad day at this race last year. It happens to literally the best of us. So yeah, like, again, just know that you're not alone. You don't suck. Like, it's just a hard race.
Yes, it really is. Yeah. And that's why it's so important to fuel and stay positive.
Yes.
So how do you think then like fueling could play into our mindset during this race?
Yeah. So, I mean, as you know, like carbohydrates, you know, they are the brain's main source of fuel, especially in higher intensity situations like running a marathon. So, if you've listened to my recaps, Sabrina, you know this, but what I have experienced is like, as I start to get tired in the race, if I was taking a gel, I would notice like 5 minutes where I didn't hate everything, like, and I felt kind of okay. And I was like, oh no, this is good. This is fun. I'm glad that I am doing this. until, you know, I would need another gel. And then I would be like, this is awful. This is overrated. I hate the hills, you know, or whatever it is. So if you're fueling properly on course, like it will also, I kind of say like, turn the volume down on the negative voice in your head. It might still be there a little bit because it's a hard race, but you know, it shouldn't be like megaphoning in your ear, like it can sometimes in a marathon. So taking carbohydrates frequently can really help with your mindset, just like in a very basic, like biological way. So what I have done in the past is if I've noticed that, I've been like, okay, that's good. I'm going to start taking gels more frequently, you know, as long as I'm tolerating it. Okay. And that's where I found that Boston just requires a bit more carbohydrate. It's really intense, especially because of where the hills are. And just the nature of the race. And yeah, that can be a super helpful strategy. And just to like take mental note of that, like, no, carbs equal happy thoughts.
Yes, love that. Yeah. Carbs equal happy thoughts. Carb happy. I love it. Run happy, carb happy. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's so true. I mean, if you've ever been hangry before, which I'm sure we all have, that means your blood sugar is dropping. And again, one of the most significant markers of like, let's say you're not getting in enough calories in general, you're going to be a little bit crankier, like from a psychological standpoint, like especially carbohydrates though, because they are your brain's number one source of fuel. Your brain just sucks up carbs all day. So like studying, it's going to make you really hungry. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm always craving sugar after I study. It's because your brain is constantly using it. And so, but when you're running a marathon, you're not necessarily going to have a grumbling stomach. I mean, if you do, good for you, but we're not going to have those like cues that we usually, because we're not like in tune with our body. So it's like, if you start to notice yourself being like, oh my gosh, this sucks, it's like your brain's probably just saying, hey, where's my fuel? Like, what are you doing to me? And so like Holly said, like taking in those gels are going to help a lot. And so not only in life, like when we do have low blood sugar, are we going to experience poor mood, but also that does apply when you're running a marathon, because guess what? When we're running a marathon, we're still a human being. We're still functioning. We're still thinking. And so it's going to be like really important. So that's why I think like what you said, like taking gels before those hills keep you positive.
Yeah. And something I will say too, what I have heard from a lot of clients, especially I did like a couple Boston groups, and what I heard from clients who maybe just didn't have a good day on the course, is that they're like, I felt like my legs and my just like energy levels gave out before like my heart did, like my cardiovascular system. So this is also a race that, again, like the fit, really, really fit people like run this race. Like you can't really rely on fitness for the course.
Yeah.
Like it does require carbohydrates, carb loading, a strategy. And that's what's really frustrating, I think, for people is they're like, my heart like wants to go faster because I feel like aerobically I can go faster, but my legs just aren't turning over. So that's where, you know, strength training and proper hill training, but also carbohydrates can really help.
Yeah, that's really good advice.
You can't hide.
You can't hide. I've heard this course can just like tear you apart in the best way. And also like, you kind of, it's like war.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like going into war.
It's like, okay, do I have the right tools? Like, and if carbs are in your toolbox, you have the right tools.
I love that. Exactly. Yeah. Carbs are good. Like I just don't, there's too much hype on like low carb things for runners these days. Yeah. And I'm just like, what in the world? I just listened to the Fuel for the Souls episode on Ozempic and like how going into the running community, it was a good one. Mm-hmm. How it's like going into the running community. It's like, no, this is not good. This is not what it's meant for. And just, yeah, carbs are good, y'all. Like if any other runner is judging you for carb loading, please just show them how amazing you're going to do in your race. Like it's going to be a much overall positive experience. I even had a really bad experience this training cycle on I always remember I texted my coach after this. I was like, I literally wanted to die. Like it was a 22-mile long run and it was my very last one. It was supposed to be like a workout, but then we were like, we can't do a workout because we got a big blizzard and we had like 8 inches of snow. So it was going to turn
Michigan.
Into a, love it. We love it. That was the nature of this training cycle. A lot of snowy runs, but, and just like treadmill runs. So we had to switch it to just like time on feet. And I went with my friends and I'm like, I mean, another workout really wouldn't do much at that point. So it was 10 on feet, but it was still awful. And so we thought, well, they initially said they would provide aid stations. So we didn't bring a handheld. We brought our gels, but we didn't have, and they said that there would be an aid station at mile 10. And so we like ran up to like mile 4. We like took a gel, you know, took some water. And they said, okay, are there any other on the course? They're like, oh no, we couldn't set them up because it's snowy. And we're like, oh, gotcha. They're like, wait, there is one at mile 10. So we run, it's an out and back. So we run all the way out. It's in the middle of nowhere, no gas stations around, nothing. We get to mile 10 and it's not there.
Oh, no.
So we're all extremely underfueled at that point. It's freezing. The wind is blowing. We have no liquids. And we're like, we have to run 10 miles back. And that would put us at mile 19 with one gel and one sip of water in our system.
Ouchie.
So I took a gel, like a second gel, like at mile like 13, because I was dying and I didn't have any water and I was like gagging the whole time. But I was significantly underfueled on that long run, and that was the worst mental state I've ever been in. I cried 3 times.
Oh, no.
And I hadn't cried. I've never cried on a run before, and I'm like, wow. I'm like, you can tell I'm very hangry right now. So that took a while to recover from, but it's very important. So personal testimony, and my coach even said that she had that same experience one time when she was just lacking and she was so emotional, and I'm like, yep, that'll do it. So it's a very strong connection. So definitely if you find yourself crying of misery on this course, like, that's fine, but maybe take a gel.
Yeah, take a gel. And if you're like, my stomach hurts, I like can't get it down, then take it and spit it out. That's literally better for your brain than not doing anything. Like, according to research, you can take some carbs, put them in your mouth, and then spit them out. They're literally so good for your brain that if you put them in your mouth and you spit them out, that is better than nothing. You know, obviously if you can swallow them, that's ideal. But, you know, if you can't, like, do something.
That is so cool. I love that. Yeah. It's actually because dopamine, coming from like a neurobiological standpoint, dopamine is released before we eat. And then it's like after we eat, it's like, our brain obviously needs it, but like the moment that you take your bite is like, that's when the dopamine releases. So it's probably what it is. So.
Probably what it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, we have carbs.
Yeah. Just kidding. But we did for a second. Yeah.
So I think one of our questions too, and just like going off of the Boston thing, like, what are your advices for those like late start races? Like, let's say we didn't have time to practice a late start long run, or let's say we're just not used to that feeling. Like, what do we do?
Yeah, it's a little tricky. And that's again why, like, if anyone's listening to this and they're like, yeah, it is my first marathon, you know, cover your ears. But like, when people tell me that, like, either Boston or New York is like their very first marathon, you know, I don't say this until they've successfully crossed the finish line, but I'm like, that's like the hardest possible first marathon you could have chosen. And it's great, you're going to have a great time. But like, it truly is, it's a whole nother level of difficult, because there's just a lot of like logistics, there's a lot of like challenging fueling patterns, but they're both challenging courses. So, you know, it's just like, wow, like, give yourself an extra high five, because that's no joke. And any other marathon you do should be easier. But, you know, in terms of the late start, you know, it's not just like, oh, we're starting late, but, you know, you have to wake up, walk across the street, and you're at the start line. No, like, you have to get up early, you have to get on a bus, or, you know, and then take the bus and drive to Hopkinton. And then you have to walk over a mile to get from Hopkinton Athletes Village to the start line. And it's just a bit of like a journey to get there. Like, you will walk 3 miles no matter what you do, usually, before getting to the start line of Boston. So, and it's fine. Like, again, it can be fine, but, that's why it's important to have a good strategy like that day, because, you know, you're going to be awake and moving around, so you better be fueling. So typically I would say like a more complex, like, long run breakfast, you know, carbs, maybe some protein, maybe a little bit of fat if you tolerate that. Okay. I'm a big fan of like, take the sports drink too at this point. And have that like when you first wake up in your hotel or in your Airbnb or at home or wherever you are, and then, you know, get your way to the buses or to the start line. And then maybe on the way there, once you're on a bus or you're in the car, whatever you're doing to get there, have more of like your simple carb snack, that's easier to digest. So that could be, you know, your first meal could have been like oatmeal with banana peanut butter, or a bagel with PB&J, or, you know, toast, graham crackers, like 6 or 7 of them, whatever your, you know, method is. And then your simple carb snack on the bus could be something like, you know, a Rice Krispie treat, or a Honey Stinger waffle, or a Pop-Tart, or, you know, something like a little bit simpler and you're still sipping fluids this whole time. Especially for Monday, it's going to be a little bit on the warmer side, not terrible, but make it a sports drink with electrolytes. Just to keep yourself hydrated. And then I tell people too, like, especially in waves 3 and 4 for Boston, because they're a little bit later, you know, have like a second carby snack too, just in case you're in Athlete's Village standing in the porta potty line and you're like kind of hungry, you know, because you don't want to be hungry, especially because you still have to walk a mile to the start line. So yeah. That's where maybe you have your second graham cracker or your second Pop-Tart or your Yucan gel or whatever it is. And then I know a lot of my clients too are a fan of like taking a gel, standing in your corral, like right on the start line, like 10 minutes to go. And you can do that too, if that's something you've practiced. So it's a bit of like a, you know, a fueling journey to get to the start line too. So for every like phase you have to go through, whether it's like hotel or it's like bus or Athlete's Village, like you're also eating something when you achieve those new levels of journey.
That's really good advice, actually. Just kind of like associating each change with like, okay, we're doing another thing. I got to put in some more fuel in my body. So,
and if you're nervous, like if you're, you know, nervous stomach in the morning, like choose something that's really easy to get down, take a couple bites of it. Literally again, putting it in your body and even spitting it out is better than just like not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So just do your best, to try and keep nibbling on something to keep your blood sugar up, because one reason why, you know, people I find also just get really burnt out by the time they get to the start is because you've gotten here for the weekend. You've been super overstimulated the whole weekend doing all the fun marathon things, as you should. They're super fun. but, you know, the morning you're really nervous, and just that nervous energy burns like much of your fuel store. Yeah. So, you know, you can definitely burn your central nervous system out before you've even started the race. So try to protect your zen and, you know, keep eating.
I love that. Protect your zen and keep eating. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be repeating that over and over again.
That's why we're recording this at a quiet hotel in Back Bay and not on Boylston Street.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I feel that. Yeah. No, that's really good advice. And so also like going into some more questions here. So you mentioned Pop-Tarts before runs, right? I mean, you and I love Pop-Tarts.
Huge fan.
Yeah. So
please sponsor me.
Literally.
Like, yeah. Would do it.
Yes, please sponsor her. Pop-Tarts.
If you're listening.
Yes. One of our listeners would like to know if they're actually healthy for you before a marathon.
Yeah. I know we both get probably commentary about Pop-Tarts on social media. People get really, they have a lot of feelings about Pop-Tarts.
They do.
Which is funny. To me. So I think there we need to define what healthy means. I think a lot of people are thinking healthy, clean eating, vegetables, water, you know, that type of thing. But healthy to me as a sports dietitian means you're eating something that, you know, is going to fulfill you, you know, from your nutritional needs and or your just like soul needs, emotional needs. Food can absolutely, you know, fulfill emotional need. Think of like, have a baby right now. Think of what quiets down a baby when, you know, they're whiny, breastfeeding, like feeding them a bottle, like feeding them. It is comforting to them. So, you know, that's just a biological human thing. It's when it's our only coping mechanism that can be a problem. But, you know, so in terms of healthy, you know, is a Pop-Tart healthy for a marathoner? Pop-Tart. You turn the back over to Pop-Tarts. I don't have one in front of me, but there's about 70 grams of carbohydrate in them. I know that because I talk about this every day and it's memorized. You know, 70 grams, simple carbohydrate, you know, probably under 10 grams of fat, not much protein. So for a marathoner who's trying to get in quick carbs to digest quickly and sit well, yeah, super healthy food to eat. You know, that's exactly going to fulfill your nutrition needs. Now, if you're eating a Pop-Tart thinking, gee, I really want this to keep me full for 3 hours and give me a lot of vitamins and minerals and maybe balance my blood sugar and, you know, like contribute to a healthy microbiome. No, like Pop-Tart's not going to be the best choice. You know, that's where some of our other more balanced and complex whole foods might come into play, but there's absolutely a healthy time and place for a Pop-Tart. And right before a marathon is one of those things. I think it was Scott Fobel, one of the elite men, is like a Pop-Tart guy before every race. So, you know,
I love that.
Again, it's something that like you don't have to do it. You can do graham crackers, you could do a bagel, you could do whatever sits well, whatever floats your boat. But Pop-Tarts are a good option, especially brown sugar cinnamon, because that's my favorite. And yes, that's literally what grew me into an adult, because that's all I would eat for 10 years when I was a kid. So
I love that so much.
Turned out okay. I became a dietitian.
Exactly. And still eats them, guys.
Still eat Pop-Tarts. Oh, yeah, for sure.
100%. And I'm also the brown sugar cinnamon fan.
Oh, so good.
Like, I love, too, what you said, like, your soul needs. Because, like, let's say you're, like, denying yourself a Pop-Tart, because, like, I just, like, don't, like... Like, let's say, like, you're like, oh, it has no nutritional value and I just want it because I want it. It's like, are you telling yourself you don't give it to yourself, that you don't deserve joy, that you don't deserve to have something yummy? Like, would you tell your friend that if they were craving a Pop-Tart? Like, guys, eat your Pop-Tarts. Like,
and if you stifle that and then it builds, you're going to eat all the Pop-Tarts. So,
yes,
again, we don't want to restrict, because that's the number one predictor of a binge. So just making decisions around, like, okay, what do I need this food to do for me right now? And is it going to do that for me right now? And if the answer is yes, eat the food. Don't feel bad about it. You know, feel great about it. You just made a good decision.
100%.
And if you're like, no, it's really not, then maybe we make, you know, another choice. But if you still also want that food, you can have it. You know, it's, you're not a bad person. You're not going to, like, derail your entire, you know, health journey or anything like that.
No, literally. Sometimes, like,
the healthiest thing can sometimes be a Pop-Tart.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Especially if you're carb loading for a marathon.
Yes. 1000%.
Yes. Or about to run.
Yes.
Speaking of pre-run snacks, people want to know what our favorite all-time favorite pre-run snacks are. So, Holly, what is yours?
Pre-run snack.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, Pop-Tarts. Good option. I also always have, like, applesauce on hand. I'm a big fan of applesauce pouches. And if I, like, if I have, like, a little bit more time, I'll do, like, an oatmeal bowl or, like, a bagel or something like that. Mm-hmm. But those are probably my, like, go-tos.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Me too. Pop-Tarts all the way. They're my favorite. But my others are Honey Stinger waffles. I love those. Yeah. And then, like, the Clif Z-Bars, I don't know. They just, like, hit so hard.
They're like a
time.
Fancy Rice Krispie treat. Like, they're good. Yeah, I like them too.
They're good. So good. I love them. Another person wanted to know, pre-race pasta or rice bowl? What do you prefer?
So, again, from a soulful standpoint, I prefer pasta, but what sits better and what I would choose is rice. So that's my answer.
Yep. Yeah. I have the same exact answer. Like, I think that, like, I love my pasta, but at the same time, like, yesterday I got a nice, like, rice and sweet potato bowl from Sweetgreen, and so good. And it sits so well with me. I'm like, okay, I feel good. Like, I'm not going to feel like I'm going to throw up.
Sometimes. I've like had that before many Boston marathons, Chicago marathons. So good.
It's so good. what is your favorite carb loading food?
I think I told you this, my go-to is like brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart and a pink Powerade. They're my favorite. It's just
that.
Like, so, I don't know. It's like fun. It like, I don't have it very often because, again, very often I'm trying to control my blood sugar in a positive way, and those things are not super great for my blood sugar, but they're perfect for carb loading. And, so whenever I have them, I just, like, know a marathon's coming, and it's exciting.
That's so cute. I love that. I have been looking for pink Powerade. I, like, tried to find it at 7-Eleven yesterday, but they, like, didn't have it. So I'm like, I'm on the hunt for pink Powerade because she recommended that to me. And so
it's like strawberry lemonade, I think.
Oh, that sounds so good. I need to get it. I should have a good sports drink today.
Find one on the way back.
I think I should. I'll be like, hey, Uber driver, can we find a pink Powerade? That's awesome. My favorite carb loading food, anything like baked goods. Like, I could eat muffins, pastries all day, every day. Like, Pop-Tarts, like, I have a huge sweet tooth. I'm all for it. I also really like Dots pretzels. Those things are, like, my favorite. So, for, like, snackies.
I love that.
I love it. Somebody said, I'm more irritable than usual during marathon training. Is that due to underfueling or just being tired from mileage? How do you decipher?
So, I would say, like, there's going to be, like, I would say 2 to 3 weeks during a whole cycle of marathon training where you're kind of tired.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, I'm glad the taper is soon. But if you can't function during that time, or that really, like, bleeds into more than 2 to 3 weeks, it's a fueling problem. You know, it's definitely, like you were saying at the beginning, like, fueling is definitely tied to our emotions. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're kind of feeling like you're a toddler who missed their snacks for, like, several weeks and you're just like a mess, it's a fueling problem. So really throwing more fuel at the wall can be helpful. I had a point, at some point a couple years ago where I was just feeling like a little burnt out, a little like overstimulated all the time by like things that wouldn't normally overstimulate me. And I was just more emotional, and I had to, like, I was like, I just want to sit like in a dark room, like, and just like stare at the wall. And I told my coach that, and you know, she was like, take a week off. And I was like, what? And I took maybe like 3 days off, and I was like, oh, I'm okay. And like my appetite got better. Uh-huh. I was able to eat more and basically just like was able to carry on, and it was fine. So yeah, if you're feeling like that, I would mess around with, you know, am I truly recovering through rest and nutrition mm-hmm. enough from training? And if not, like do less, eat more for a couple days, and that will be better for your situation and your fitness than like just pushing through.
Yeah, that's really good advice too. And like yeah, I like you said, like marathon training, it's tiring. Like you're gonna feel tired, but like if it's turning into the point where it's, I mean, even when we're like diagnosing people, if like they're coming in with problems and it's like, okay, is it significantly impacting your day-to-day life? That is a criteria for getting diagnosed with the psychological disorder according to the DSM. So like yeah, if your fatigue from marathon training is interfering with your functioning in your day-to-day life, that would be criteria. Like what do they have, like marathon training disorder?
Red flag. Yeah.
Red flag. Yeah. But yeah, then that's like really good to notice as well. Like, I mean, I even notice like, and sometimes too, like marathon training, it can blunt your appetite on those high mileage weeks. Like I notice myself, like it's sometimes it's just like you have to eat as like self-care. You do not need to like, I mean, your hunger cues, they might not necessarily be there after a big 20-mile run with gels in your stomach. But, like, you know that if you don't, you might feel a little bit cranky later. You'll be like, why am I so tired? And you're like, oh, I just need to eat. My stomach doesn't need to rumble. So, yeah that's really good advice. Somebody wants to know, how much protein do I need when carb loading?
Oh, you have this in your stories too, which I loved because I'm the same way. So, yeah, you know, as a sports dietitian, like, and just what the studies show, like, we, you know, it's like an 80 to 90% of what you're eating should come from carbohydrates for 2 to 3 days before a marathon to properly carbo load. But, you know, we could also, what's also better to do is take your body weight or what you think your body weight might be and multiply that by 8 to 12 grams per kilogram of carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And that's how many carbs you should get. So that's kind of like the most important part. So if you're finding, you know, this is really hard for me to do, and like, I feel okay doing it and I'm kind of getting it in and it's going okay, then that's great. You don't really need to think about protein or fat too much. But if you're like, I am having these like highs and then crashes, mm-hmm. like highs and then crashes, and you're almost getting like a reactive hypoglycemic mm-hmm. response, which is what happens to me. Mm-hmm. You know, or if you are like insulin resistant too, so you know, not all those carbohydrates are necessarily getting into your cells for energy. They're kind of hanging out in your bloodstream because you have an insulin response issue, then it can be good to think about protein. So this is where like to kind of just feel good, especially like the first couple of days carb loading, I typically recommend still having like 20 grams of protein, like every 3 to 4 hours, like mm-hmm. with a meal. And maybe your snacks can be a little bit more carb heavy, but at your meals, at least still getting in a bit of protein, because that'll just help stabilize your blood sugar and make you feel like not like you're riding a roller coaster. Because I know a lot of people can feel that way. And if you're struggling to like meet the bare minimum of carbs using that like body weight per gram of carb, calculation, then you can actually even do a bit of a longer carb load, like kind of like a longer but slightly more conservative mm-hmm. carb load is what I tell some people to. And then maybe you're starting, you know, 4, 5, 6 days before your race, and you're, you know, at kind of like the lowest end of what a carb loading range mm-hmm. would be, but you're still getting in your protein and you're feeling a little bit better. Yeah.
Oh, that's good advice too, to prolong it like that, because yeah, that's honestly sometimes what I do. I just like that whole week I prioritize carbs, and then mm-hmm. I'm like, that way, like if I get distracted and my carb load doesn't go perfectly those last 2 days, I'm like, okay, I've built up my reserves throughout this week. We're feeling good. And I also get reactive hypoglycemia. Mm-hmm. So like I have to have a little bit of protein. So like yesterday I had like a muffin and a Pop-Tart, and if I just ate those, I would feel awful within like 30 minutes, but I had the protein shake with it and it felt so much better. So I personally do have some protein, but like not a lot. That's really good. Another protein question: is protein overhyped in the running community?
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
yes and no. So I have two kinds of clients. I have clients who come to me from like more of like a CrossFit background. Maybe they've worked with like a macro type coaching style and they've been told you need 150, you know, plus grams of protein per day. And they're like, you know, dying, trying to make that happen. And it's keeping them so full that it's like displacing their appetite and they don't have enough room for like carbohydrates or to meet their calorie needs. And that's a problem. And that's where it's like, your protein needs are higher than we thought they used to be for runners, but definitely not still not as high as like someone who's primarily weightlifting and not running. And then the other type of client I have is someone who is kind of just like grazing throughout the whole day and they're never really full. They're like always hungry and maybe they're not eating enough protein to keep them full. Or if they're struggling to build muscle mass, or maybe it's like a woman who's going through perimenopause and her protein needs are starting to increase and she's just not getting enough. You know, that could be someone where I'm like, yeah, we do need to emphasize protein a little bit more. So it really just depends on where you're at. I think, you know, if you're kind of in like the FitSpo, you know, aesthetic gym goer type space on social media, it might be a bit overemphasized. But yeah, it kind of depends.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I see that too, but like, obviously I'm not a dietitian, but I definitely see a lot of runners like, oh, I'm having this like protein yogurt bowl after my run that's made with like zero sugar yogurt and protein powder. And I'm like, okay.
So the protein's great, but like we're just not super complete.
We're the little carbs. Exactly. We're a lot of carbs. Another person wants to know, do I need gels after mile 20 of a marathon?
After mile 20?
Yes.
Oh yeah, for sure. Unless you're finishing within like 30 minutes, but I don't think most of the people talking are like elite male athletes.
Kipchoge, are you listening?
Are you listening? And if so, I know you still probably take a gel or whatever's in your bottle at mile 23, but yeah, you do. Because like I said, if you've carb loaded properly, that'll kind of get you through that 2.5 hour like time frame, because that's enough. Typically, that's how much glycogen one can store in their body, is like through 2 to 2.5 hours, which is also why elite marathoners, like they should carb load, but it's not as important because they're done by 2 to 2.5 hours, where us other people are not done, not even close. So, you know, that's going to get you through 2 to 2.5 hours. So for most people, that's like miles 16 to 21. So you need the gels in your system, you know, before mile 20 and after, to get you through the finishing stretch, like feeling like you don't want to die, feeling good. So yeah, I typically recommend gels every, you know, 30 minutes or so. So yeah, I mean, that's going to be at least one or two after mile 20.
Okay. For most people. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
I still have a trauma from my first marathon. I took a Huma caffeine mocha gel at mile 23 and I was like,
that's rough.
Not feeling good. No, I felt so bad. Jake, if you're listening to this, I know you do. He was like, he coached me for my first marathon and he ran like 5 miles with me and I was like, he's like, three, take a gel. I'm like, Jake, I don't want to be here. And I was like, I want to be done. And he was like, you can do it. And I was like, so cranky. And I was like, so bad.
Yeah, it's,
but it works.
The gel you take after mile 20, they are not gels you want to take. They are gels you are forcing into your mouth and trying to swallow. And again, even if you get it in, you spit it out, that's better than nothing.
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, I always say too, the gels you put after mile 20, like, think about it. If a mocha, you know, flavored gel is like not going to be the best thing, you know, if you're like, that doesn't sound appetizing to me, like after a long run, then don't place that in your lineup for, you know, after mile 20. Like for me, that's when I'll take like my Mortons that are unflavored or like my favorite flavor of Huma gel, or just something like that's different than what I had been taking. Cause like you get flavor fatigue too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, that's so smart. Yeah, no, I love that. Those post mile, I'm like, I'm taking my medicine. Yeah. It's going to be okay.
Dissociate and get it down.
Yes, exactly. Like plug your nose.
And think of me when you do it.
Exactly. Oh, I will be. I'm going to be feeling during that marathon and be like, Holly, like, I don't want to do this.
But. I've taken a gel at mile 24 of every Boston marathon.
Okay.
That I've run.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and take 9 tomorrow, or on Mondays.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to know if they can drink soda during a carb load. Like, pop
for sure.
Yeah, like I don't see why not.
Make it like not a diet one too, like simple source of carbohydrates on ultra, like aid station stops at ultra races, they often have soda because it's carbs. It's caffeine, Yeah, I love that. It's a great option. It's usually flattened, you know, because you don't want bubbles when you're running a 50-mile yeah. race. But yeah, absolutely. If you know you tolerate soda okay, go for it.
I love it. I love me a good soda. I love bubbles. My yeah. friends know me. I'm addicted to bubbles, but it's fine.
Yeah,
that's awesome. How much, or how do I know if I'm getting enough sodium during a marathon?
That's a good question.
Is a big sign.
Yeah. So that's right? something you should have practiced in training. Typically, like, you want to see between 300 and 600 milligrams of sodium per hour minimum for most people. If you're like someone who always has salt on your skin after mm-hmm. you do something that made you sweaty, like, you're probably on the saltier side. So you probably want at least 600 to 800 milligrams, if not more than that. I have some clients who take in like 1500 milligrams an hour. So there's a big range here, uh-huh. which is why I would need more like individual feedback to properly answer this mm-hmm. question. But those are the ranges at least that we recommend to start.
That's okay. That's really good to know. Yeah. yeah. And I know that like, I've heard like in podcasts before that like nausea can be a symptom of like low sodium and stuff, right?
Like, yeah, if you're like nauseous, throwing mm-hmm. up, if you get like more GI issues as the mm-hmm. run goes on, mm-hmm. if you feel like your fingers swell, you know, if you stop sweating, like those are all signs of dehydration. It just like, that's where for me as a sports dietitian, I'm asking the person questions to figure out, is it because we didn't get enough fluid? Is it because we didn't mm-hmm. get enough sodium, or is it mm-hmm. both? Like, is there an imbalance or mm-hmm. is it both? So, gotcha. Yeah, it just has to do with like fluid balance.
Gotcha. You know, that'll be so interesting. So I'm actually a research participant at Boston this year.
Oh, and sweet.
So,
you're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So I'm getting my blood drawn actually at the expo after this. So I'm hoping they don't take too much low key. Cause I'm like, I gotta use that.
I need that.
I know. Right. but it'll be interesting. Cause I think there's studies all about like gut permeability and like sweat rate composition and like yeah. what your electrolyte imbalances are before and after. So mm-hmm. I'm like so intrigued about this. I'm obviously a science nerd. You guys know me if you guys listen to this, and I know that like Holly loves research too. And so yeah. I'm like this is so interesting because like I've always wondered like how, like why are people so different? Like how come Emma Bates can just take some Yukins, no water yeah. during a freaking marathon? And then there's some people who like need 1500 milligrams of sodium. Like mm-hmm. it's just crazy. And I'm a very salty sweater, and for saying my sports dietitian has me on like 4,000 milligrams of sodium is my goal per day. And I'm like, that's a lot, but I'm like, I did not know that. Like, that's just so wild. It's just, yeah. yeah.
And we're always told like sodium bad, like, yeah. you know, so it's like getting over that mental barrier too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of people need a lot more. Than oh yeah. They do.
100%.
Yeah. Most elite runners are not salty sweaters. That's like one reason that gives them like a freak genetic advantage. Oh, but like, yeah, I mean, Emma Bates is never going to need, you know, a bunch of sodium in her marathon. But you know, you and me, like we're not yeah. Emma Bates. So like we might need
Dang.
It. Always a bummer to figure that out. But yeah, so I mean, I would mess around with it. And if you're feeling okay, like you can keep going up, like there's a big range. So I kind of tell people to keep like adding more until you kind of get the same symptoms mm-hmm. and then back off a little bit.
Love yeah. that. That's really good advice. Speaking of Emma Bates, if you could be any pro runner for a day, who would you be? Somebody wants to know.
Oh my gosh. Do you have an answer?
There's so many.
I know. I'm like, who do I want to be?
So many people.
I kind of want to be like Des Linden. She's so cool.
Yeah. She's really cool. I was going to say.
And everyone knows who she is. Like, I don't yes. know. I feel like it'd be kind of fun.
She's.
And she so has dogs. So.
Exactly. but she has to run through Michigan winners. So.
That's true. I want to be Des Linden for a day in the summer.
Yes, exactly. No, she's so cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many hard. I would either say Emma Bates or I would say Kara Goucher because I just met her. So. She's really
oh, yeah.
Cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Let's see. Maybe we have time for a couple more. How about, why do I feel crankier when I'm carb loading?
Crankier?
Mm-hmm.
Probably it could be that like roller coaster blood sugar high and low. Like if you're a bit crankier, that could be why. So kind of what I said to answer one of the previous questions, like adding a bit more protein throughout mm-hmm. your day, that can be helpful, and just see if that helps at all. And just make sure you're eating enough. Cause again, yeah. if we're prioritizing carbs, sometimes people will like undereat too.
Mm-hmm.
Just because carbs don't really stick around super long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be one reason. And like, make sure you ate enough during training. Cause if you feel like carb loading is significantly different than what you did during your training, especially your peak training, then there's a chance you just didn't eat enough during training. Mm-hmm. So it should feel like a gentle scale up and not like night and day.
Yeah. That's great advice. Wow. All right. Well, we have answered most of these questions, but we are actually preparing for a fun little meetup here for Holly's meetup, which is awesome. But like you gave such good advice in the nutrition department today, Holly. Again, thank you so much. I know my listeners are going to be so excited because they're always asking about this stuff and do not have the qualifications to answer. So I so appreciate your time and energy in this. And do you have any last minute words of advice before I tackle Boston for the first time?
Just have fun. Like have so much fun. Enjoy every step. Like take it all in, especially your first one. Like it's just, and you're going to have like good weather. It's not going to be like where the course you can't even recognize because it's raining sideways. Like, no, you're gonna have good weather, so just like take it in. And like for me, the right turn onto Hereford snuck up on me the first time, and I didn't realize I had turned onto Hereford until I was on Boylston. So like, remember, if you make any turns on the course, it means like you're almost done because it's a straight shot. But
I love that.
Yeah, but have so much fun. You're gonna love it.
Thank you so much. And I just remember, like, I listened to Holly's podcast when I first started running like 2.5 years ago, and it was different. It was like nutrition. Yes. And I was like, oh my gosh, she gives such good advice on this. And I was just like, you helped me through like my first half marathon. And I remember I was like, Holly, I signed up for a marathon. And I just like followed like a lot of your carb loading advice. And now we're here. And it's just like so cool. So
full circle moment.
Full circle. Holly's amazing. And I'm sure you all follow her already. But if not, please go follow her. She's just like the most wholesome person and most amazing. Like, my favorite dietitians out there. So seriously, you're amazing. And yeah, with that, thank you guys so much for listening today. I'm hoping that you took something out of this, and thank you again, Holly, for being on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, and have fun on Monday.